Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thanks for listening to the Primetime with Isaac and Souk. I'm Souk, by the way. Podcast brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center, doing the right thing since 1952.
Ah, cute.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
This is Primetime on Football Friday. 1080 The Fan.
We're going to ring that championship bell.
60 minutes. Let's open up the whole can of kick ass and kill them all. Let the paramedics sort them out. Ready?
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Grab an award-winning pie from Sherry's for your next football viewing party or tailgater. Sherry's Cafe and Pies. Fresh, local, delicious.
On 1080, The Fan.
All right, coming up in the club, we have Trump audio. At 5:15, we will set your college football DVR.
I'm really rich.
Want to thank Papa John's for bringing us pie today.
Very, going to say the exact word for it. It's the best surprise when I show up and I forget that there was pizza.
Oh.
Like, I was trying to think of the appropriate word, like, to use, like, for my enjoyment. Like, I forgot they were...
How about delicious?
Yeah, but it's not delicious when I show up. It's just, it was, like, the best surprise I could have. When I wandered in the office, I was like, oh, yeah, pizza's here. Mm. I had completely forgot.
Yeah, they brought us some pizza. They have great za. And they're a big sponsor of our Seahawks coverage here on 1080 The Fan, which, by the way, we just gave away. I don't know if you caught that, but Mike played the sounder, and we did give away the Seahawks-Falcons tickets.
Courtesy of Papa John's.
Some guy named Kai won.
Way to go, Kai.
Hopefully he's a 12.
You love your 12s.
So I want to thank Papa John's for bringing us some za. It was tasty. And also a reminder to you that anytime the Seahawks win, this year, the very next day, you can get half off at papajohns.com. Just use the promo code HawksWin. Okay. We are on time. This is exciting.
Hey, look at us. Well, on time for us.
Let's get to the Hot 5 at 5.
Hot topics, hot opinions.
The beard, the shirt, the greasy hair.
And hot air.
Somehow it just works.
It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
Cool, cool.
Think it'll scare the kids?
The Hot 5 at 5 on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
5? How'd you know that?
Refreshed by Laurelwood Brewing Company. Handcrafted beer, local food, and kid approved.
All right.
Have it all at Portland's original family-friendly brew pub, Laurelwood Public House and Brewery.
Number five. Added for some levity. That's all. I've got some NBA stuff today.
Ooh, hot preseason NBA news, I hope.
Well, there's a big injury, which we'll get to. But first, let's tee you up for the Trailblazers. Second of their 7 preseason games tonight at the Moda Center, as they call it now. The Phoenix Suns in town. We will be tracking high fives and fist bumps. Jake Layman and Noah Vonleh should play. Myers Leonard should be back next week.
And more importantly, Isaac Robb hosting Talking Ball tonight.
Yes.
Not panelist.
Yes.
Host.
Host.
Isaac Robb.
So it should be a disaster. The Blazers over-under win total in Vegas this year is 45 games.
I think I'm going to take the over on that. I might lay a sawbuck down on that.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't know if Portland gets to what Neil said, what, 53, 54?
He said 86.
I don't think he said 86. I think it was more like 79. But I feel like they'll get more than 45.
Okay.
Got some depth this year.
Number four.
The Bucks need a shooter. Milwaukee Bucks. They offered the Kings Michael Carter-Williams for Ben McLemore. The Kings said no.
Yeah, that seems a bit... I don't know. I would think just on paper that would make sense.
Why does no one like Michael Carter-Williams?
He was Rookie of the Year, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah.
I like Michael Carter.
I mean, he can't shoot, but...
And it just seems that the star has faded a bit.
Yeah, nobody wants him. Milwaukee is known to be shopping both Carter-Williams and Greg Monroe, who are now firmly on their bench. And here is a nugget.
Greg Monroe was one of the big signings in free agency.
from the NBA that just came down. Utah lost Gordon Hayward today.
Yeah, broke his finger, could miss up to 6 weeks.
Yeah, they don't know. He's kind of checking out his options, maybe surgery, but I tell you what you can count on every year in the National Basketball Association is that the Utah Jazz will be hurt.
That's just kind of the, well, Philadelphia
76ers always hurt.
Not Philadelphia 76ers hurt. I mean, the Sixers have the corner market on that, for heaven's sakes. All the Sixers do is draft guys number one or number two overall that won't play all year.
Colin Kaepernick could be starting for the San Francisco 49ers.
Look, you've done stepped in it one too many times when Colin Kaepernick is your savior. I feel like this is only a story because of the whole kneeling for the anthem thing. Colin Kaepernick, before he got benched, was the worst quarterback in the NFL. He lost a bunch of weight. They said that he's been routinely outplayed in practice by Blaine Gabbert.
Practice.
Why all of a sudden is there this like talk that that Colin Kaepernick is some sort of savior for the 49ers? I was listening today to some of the talking heads on ESPN that like they couldn't believe that Kaepernick, like it was some sort of travesty, Greek tragedy, that Colin Kaepernick hasn't been playing for the 49ers. He sucks.
Well, they're 1-4, and Blaine Gabbert sucks too, so maybe try him. I don't know. There seems to be a growing sentiment in the locker room, according to one report, that Christian Ponder maybe also getting a nod because the players like him. So
I just find it odd that there's this huge push for Kaepernick, and I honestly think a lot of it is because of the protest thing. Well, you know, Kaepernick's in the news a lot. Kaepernick is bad.
So the Niners have a bye, and their next game will be at Buffalo.
The other one is there's some people saying that Chip Kelly's seat is already hot.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Which I find amazing. Hey, after guys get fired after 1 year all the time.
They do. I don't think he's going to get fired, though.
It's a very knee-jerk reaction, but if you lose the locker room and it goes south, strange things happen in the NFL. It stands for not for long.
Hey, I tell you what, it is a tough league, man. Did you see what the Carolina Panthers did today?
Yeah, they Julio Jones got a guy fired.
They cut, yeah, pretty much. They cut Benny Benwickery,
who basically was responsible for a lot of the man coverage on Julio Jones when he had the 300-yard game, and thanks for coming.
The thing about this is he's a corner.
Yeah.
He had been playing very well. He was thought to be the guy who was going to step in and replace Josh Norman when they let him go. But Julio Jones burnt him repeatedly last week, and so they cut his ass.
I wonder, too, how much, like, was there an attitude problem there? Something's got to be going on. To get burned one game, and then you get let go? The only position that really happens with is kickers. That's one of those, like, you miss 2-3 kicks in a game, you may not be back the next week. That you see, but very rarely do you see something like this.
Man, what a day in baseball. We'll go chronologically. The first game was Toronto in Texas. Rangers have now dropped 2 in a row. Toronto wins today 5-3. They only had 6 hits, but 4 of them were home runs. They beat up Yu Darvish pretty good. The Rangers were 2 of 18 with runners in scoring position in this game.
Yikes.
So Toronto takes a 2-0 lead. Now, can you name the last team in the division series who came back and won after losing the first 2 games?
And they did both of this at home. So now they have to go on the road to Toronto. Come back 0-2. Gosh.
It was Toronto last year.
Was it really?
Yep.
Who'd they fall down 0-2?
Texas. They came back and beat Texas.
Oh, that's the Joey Bats series. The bat flip heard around the world?
Right?
I don't...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, they were down 0-2.
Well, maybe flip the script on them. Although it's tough when you throw out both your aces and they both get shelled.
How about... Yeah, Texas looks done. They didn't look good for 2 games. And the Jays kind of have that look. How about my Indians? They shut out the Red Sox today 6-0. Cleveland has a 2-0 lead on the Red Sox in that series.
Yeah. Well, you said this going in. I'll give you credit for it. You were saying that you thought maybe the most complete team in baseball was the Cleveland Indians. And people just aren't paying much attention to them.
In the American League.
In the American League. Sorry. The Cubs are the most complete in the National, but we were talking about who comes out of the AL and
They've lost 2 of their key starters because they're hurt, Carrasco and Salazar. But
Kluber went today and pitched a gem.
Kluber was great. And
their
bullpen
was great in game one.
And they have Josh Tomlin going tomorrow, who's been up and down in the second half, but he's a good arm. Kluber threw 7 innings of 3-hit shutout ball today. David Price got tagged for 5 runs. He is now 2-8 in his career in the postseason.
Well, Kershaw got chased, after 5 today for the Dodgers? I think he went 5 and gave up 3 runs. So Look, not everyone's Madison Bumgarner in these playoffs, but Kershaw and Price, who do not have good postseason records, both with bad performances today.
So the Dodgers lead the Nationals 4-3. That game is currently in the top of the seventh. That is game one of that series. Kershaw gave up 3 runs in 5 innings. Scherzer, they just pulled him. He gave up 4 runs in 6 innings. And so they turned it over to the bullpens there. Both of those teams have very good bullpens. And then tonight, we will get Giants-Cubs game one. It's Johnny Cueto against John Lester, and that is to start at 6.
And by the way, what does this say about the apocalypse if both the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Indians win championships in the same year?
Well,
I think that may be the seventh seal.
That it is nigh.
I don't think it's that big of a deal unless the Browns turn it around and win it too. And then
I don't think that's going to happen.
Then you know something's going on.
I think we're pretty safe in that Cleveland is not going to win the Super Bowl.
It all starts this weekend. They're taking out Tom.
They take out Tommy, and then all hell breaks loose.
The Hot 5 at 5, folks, is courtesy of Laurelwood Brewing Company. Enjoy Laurelwood's award-winning golden ale in a can in 6-packs where better beer is sold. Coming up next, it's a nice weekend in college football, and we will set your college football DVR. 513 on The Fan.
On 1080, The Fan.
Someone texted and asked if there's ever been a city that won all 3 championships, NBA, NFL, and MLB, in the same year. And we've talked about this before. And I seem to remember this being tricky because are you talking about the same calendar year or are you talking about the same season? So, because you could look at it either way. In the 1969-1970 season, the Jets, the Mets, and the
Knicks, or were you talking Knicks. NHL?
Yes, no, you're right. Mets, Jets, Knicks all won championships. Other than that, I don't know of another one.
The only one that I could think of that'd be recent, maybe Boston. Red Sox, Celtics, and Patriots.
But I don't know if that happened all in the same year. And
the Bruins won one, too.
The Bruins won one in there, too.
But I don't think they won it all in the same year.
No, I don't.
Detroit had football, baseball, and hockey back in the 30s. Happened, yep.
Huh. So, but you're saying they didn't just have them all. They won the championship.
There was a year in the 30s where all 3 won the championship.
That's weird, too. Like, back then, I don't know about the others, but, like, I know in hockey, like, in the 30s, there was, like, 6 teams, maybe 8. And in the NBA, they're used to it's the same sort of thing. Like, winning titles, I don't want to dismiss titles from, like, the 30s and 40s, but it's a lot easier to win championships back then than it is now.
And did you know that Boston teams have won championships in an amazing 10% of the total seasons they've played since 1965?
Really?
Which is the most of any U.S. city with at least 2 teams.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's awesome.
When you look at, especially recently, if you're going to be from one city, I'm going to say in the last 15 years, Boston would be the city you'd want to be from.
Not even close.
It's in the 80s. Well, I mean, if you want to go back a lot further than that, but in the 80s, you had dynasty with the Celtics. You've had in modern times, you've had the dynasty with the Patriots. The Red Sox have been really good. And I think the Bruins have just won one, but you still have a Stanley Cup.
Okay.
I don't know, by the way, if you go back even into the 80s, if there's another city that's got all 4. I'm trying to think because New York, like in the 80s, you haven't had a Knicks championship. You have had the Yankees. You've had the Rangers win one. Trying to think about Los Angeles. Los Angeles has had hockey. You've had the NBA, but you haven't had a Super Bowl. In Chicago?
White Sox, Bulls, and
Blackhawks.
Blackhawks. I guess the Bears haven't won in a while.
Yeah, Bears, you'd have to go back into the 80s. And the Bears was 85.
Oh. Do you know what U.S. city is second on the list in terms of
percent?
Yes, it's percent of its championships in the percent of total seasons that they've played. And this is over the last 50 years.
Maybe New York, just because they've won so many baseball championships.
It is Pittsburgh.
Steelers, huh?
At 8%.
Penguin Steelers.
Penguin Steelers.
And the Pirates haven't won jack.
No. When's a little bit? The Pirates haven't been good for forever. You had that brief run with Bonilla and Bonds, Van Slyke, but before that you had to,
Well, they got back to the playoffs. They shed like a 27 or 28 year no playoff streak.
Yeah, they were
just
terrible.
Recently. Okay, cue the music there, Maestro. Let's set your college football DVR. Here's what's going on this weekend. By the way, do we have a score update on the Boston College-Clemson game?
21-3 Clemson.
Okay. Oh, and I forgot about this. Someone said the Raiders won a Super Bowl in Los Angeles. I was thinking Oakland, but yeah, the Raiders were in Los Angeles in the 80s. I think they won a Super Bowl while they were there.
Hey, we have a game at 8:30 tomorrow morning.
Anything good?
How about that? No, that Cincinnati-UConn game.
I'll go ahead and pass.
At 8:30. Auburn-Mississippi State, it's a 9 a.m. game on ESPN. I do feel like they're making a better effort to put better games on at 9 a.m.
Agreed. It does seem like this year, because normally you just get crappy ACC and like Big Ten games.
Yeah.
But there's actually been some nice top 25 matchups.
Well, the best game, well, I guess theoretically, the best game was supposed to be Florida-LSU, but they have postponed that game. So Oklahoma-Texas, though, in Dallas, that is going to be a 9 a.m. game. That'll be on FS1.
And by the way, the LSU athletic director throwing some serious shade at Florida, basically saying that Florida refused to come up with a solution to play this thing and says that they don't think that they're going to be able to make it up.
Yeah, I don't know what to think of that.
Because he said that
Is he saying they're doing that on purpose to avoid playing them? Why would they want to avoid playing LSU?
He's just saying that he offered multiple solutions. He offered to play it in Baton Rouge. He offered to play it at a neutral site. He said that they would fly in on Sunday and play on Sunday and get out of there on Monday. He said they'd be willing to do that. And he said Florida just kept turning them down at every turn. And so he basically put the blame in and said that Florida refused to play this game. And basically that LSU wasn't going to bend over backwards to make up this game. It sure sounded like what I read today is the Florida AD is throwing the middle finger and saying, we're not going to play this because we tried everything to make it happen, and Florida said no.
You mean the LSU AD?
Or excuse me, the LSU AD was saying that about the Gators.
Huh. Interesting. That'll be the first time they won't play, if they don't make that up, since 1970. But yeah, the Red River rivalry, Oklahoma-Texas, I don't know what to make of this. I think it's going to be a shootout. I took Texas earlier in our picks, plus 11. I think that could be actually a pretty good game. But Charlie Strong, it seems like, is coaching for his job, and maybe even Bob Stoops, too.
Yeah, it sounds like it. But with Charlie, like literally every game is for his job. I think Stoopsy, it's just that you got to avoid a collapse. As long as they don't go in the tank here, they're still top 20 team. But yeah, there's some talk that if Stoops has this thing go south and lose to Texas, would certainly do that he may be looking for a job. And wouldn't that be interesting to have Oklahoma, another job that could be open? You could have Auburn, USC, Texas, LSU, all with open jobs at the end of the year.
Well, in Oklahoma's defense, they have lost to two of the better teams in all of college football.
Yeah, but you got stomped.
Yeah.
They weren't
Houston
close.
And Ohio State. But they've won their other two games, so this is a big one for them, taking on Texas, so that's at 9 a.m. Then we move ahead a little bit here. Indiana's playing Ohio State. Did you see that Urban Meyer said Indiana's defense is better than Oklahoma's?
Indiana just got done knocking off Michigan State. That I know Michigan State, some of the shines come off of them, but it was a big win for Indiana.
Yeah, these are the 12:30 games. BYU, Michigan State, Indiana, Ohio State.
By the way, take a look at it. Virginia Tech has climbed back into the top 25, and they go on the road. So number 25, Va Tech, at number 17, North Carolina.
Yeah.
And North Carolina, look, they were in the ACC title game last year and damn near beat Clemson. And that North Carolina-Miami on that side of the ACC could be interesting, and they play next week. So if North Carolina wins this week against Virginia Tech, and if Miami beats Florida State, you got a chance of maybe a number 8 Miami team probably playing a 13 North Carolina next week for the right to go on and play in the ACC title game.
Do we have to admit that the ACC is actually getting better?
Yeah, I think it's time to admit that the ACC is not a garbage league anymore.
With what Miami's doing, and then add Louisville to Clemson, and then Florida State's down, but they're still loaded with talent.
And North Carolina is a good program. Yeah, the ACC is a lot better than what we give it credit for.
Also at 12:30 on CBS will be Tennessee-Texas A&M. This is an interesting game.
Well,
top 10 teams.
Yeah, and doesn't it seem like it's the quietest top 10 matchup of the year?
Yeah, because I don't think... I think there's just a lot of people that don't buy either of them.
Yeah, and yet they're both sitting there undefeated, 1-8, 1-9.
I think they're both good. It should be a good game.
Well, the Tennessee is the damnedest thing because Tennessee's MO apparently is to fall down by double digits early, look like dog crap, and then decide in the second half to come out and be world beaters.
What a bunch of punks. Their quarterback's pretty good, though. So that's
12:30 CBS.
Interesting one. And then at the 1 o'clock game on the Pac-12 Network is Colorado-USC, which I am actually excited for, if I'm able to see it, because I don't have the Pac-12 Network. But That should be a pretty good game.
I think so. USC, by the way, even though they're not ranked, Colorado 21, USC favored by 5.5 in that. I'm taking the points and the Buffs. I think the Buffaloes get this.
Alabama's at Arkansas. That is number 1 Alabama, number 16 Arkansas, 4 o'clock on ESPN. What else do we have here? Washington, Oregon, that game is going to be on Fox tomorrow at 4:30. And then Florida State, Miami is at 5 on ABC.
And by all accounts, that game is going to go, they're saying that the hurricane is avoiding the South. And so everything you've read is that Miami is going to be just fine from that, and there will be no delays in that game.
You know, I'll be honest with you. I think this good stuff is middle of the day to early evening tomorrow.
I would agree with that.
The late night stuff is Cal Oregon State at 6 on Pac-12 Network, Arizona Utah on FS1 at 7.
Could get some Pac-12 after dark, though. 7:30 ESPN, Washington State at Stanford.
Yeah, and then also UCLA Arizona State.
Look at the problems that Stanford had dealing with the passing game of UW, and in comes Washington State off a real nice performance. This is a chance for Washington State to maybe save their season. That's a tough one going on the road against Stanford, but I mean, who knows what Stanford's going to be like after taking that whooping against UW. Could be a big game for the Cougs.
Yeah, so the biggest games, just to recap, Oklahoma-Texas is a 9 a.m. game, 12:30, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, and Tennessee-Texas A&M, Oregon-Washington, 4:30, and then Florida State-Miami at 5. So that is how your day shapes up tomorrow. And I'll be at the sports page in Beaverton watching the Ducks game, so come on by. I think there will perhaps be a celebrity sighting of Officer Potter.
Really?
There's some talk.
Oh, boy.
It could happen.
Him and his guns?
Oh, the guns will be out.
The tight T-shirt, the tight Oregon shirt will be out.
So, hope to see you there for that. We're giving away a bunch of stuff, giving away Civil War tickets. Coming up next, how long will Chip Kelly last? Here is Mike.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Brought to you by Sherry's Cafe and Pies.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, here's our poll question today. 1080thefan.com. Do you believe Mark Helfrich is coaching for his job against the Huskies? Right now, 70% of you say, oh, come on! But 30% say, absolutely, this is it. I think you got a close game tomorrow for at least a half, if not three quarters, but I think Washington's lines wear out Oregon's lines, and they win by double digits.
Yeah, I think there's a chance. I mean, I don't think that this is like some sort of giant lopsided matchup, because you saw what Washington went on the road against Arizona, and they looked very ordinary, and I think Oregon's better than Arizona, and I've also pointed out, I think they should have beat Nebraska, and they should have beat Colorado. They had simple throws that if Dakota Prukup makes one throw in both of those games at the end, Oregon's 4-1 right now, and we're probably looking at the season completely differently, even though it's the same team. The same flaws are still there. We're talking about it differently. And then the Washington game against Stanford, I think, has skewed our view of Washington. But when I look at these two teams, I don't see many favorable matchups for Oregon. I can't think of a reason why Oregon is going to win this game, especially if you end up playing a true freshman quarterback. And it sounds like he's at least going to get some serious time here, if not be the guy going forward. That's a tough task against the best defense in the conference. And it's a defense, by the way, that doesn't have to blitz to get home. They blitz on less than 5% of their snaps. It's by far the lowest in Division I football of the Power 5 conferences. Oh, and by the way, they have 21 sacks so far in the year, which is far and away the best in the conference. So none of that's a recipe for success, but I'm with you. I do think if Oregon shows up, unlike against Washington State, this can be a close game for a while. But I actually think what you said to me, it's kind of spot on. Just the offense and the defensive lines, I think, are such mismatches for Washington that eventually into the fourth quarter, that stuff really starts to wear on a team. And Washington should be able to get easy points and kind of grind it out. And I think for Oregon, it's going to be a struggle. I think if Oregon's going to have a chance, they have to make big plays. I don't think Oregon, one, is going to be able to stop Washington. It's the number one scoring offense in the Pac-12. Oregon's defense is atrocious. But Oregon offensively, I don't think that they can go on 13, 14 play drives. I think they have to do what Arizona did, and that's hit big chunks. I think they have to throw the ball over the top. They've got to break some big runs against Washington and get some easy points as opposed to trying to go on drives that wears out Oregon's defense, because I don't think they can consistently do it with the mismatch with three NFL defensive linemen against four redshirt freshman linemen for Oregon.
Adam Jude, who is a writer, used to cover the Ducks. Now he's up in Seattle covering the Huskies. He just said on Twitter that Washington has only led Oregon for 8 minutes in the last 12 years.
Well, you look at it outside of last year, which was a 6-point win for Oregon. I think it was it 26-20, something like that, 6-point game. There has not been a game that's been decided by less than two scores. I mean, this has not been a competitive series. I mean, this has been just an ass kicking. And, you know, I suppose there's some of that, and people are saying, well, you know, it's, you know, look at the history of it, but these are two totally different teams. Like, I don't buy that whole, well, there's something to a streak. Far from it. In fact, I think that actually plays in Washington's hands. I think when Washington went on the road to Arizona, I think that was a look ahead game. They should have won that game by three touchdowns, and they were sloppy. They were unprepared, too many penalties. It did not look like a Chris Peterson team. And talking to some people up there, a lot of people close to that program believed that that was a look ahead game, that they were looking ahead to Stanford and Oregon. And with the type of season that they're having coming off of the big win against Stanford, I could see where maybe they overlook Oregon, but I think the 12-year streak and the way that that series has gone, I don't think that Washington overlooks Oregon. Far from it. I think you're going to see the same sort of intensity and focus they had against Stanford. I think you're going to see that tomorrow at Autzen Stadium, and that doesn't bode well for Oregon because Washington is a better coach team, and it's a more talented team right now, and it's a deeper team, and it's a more physical team.
All right, text 55305. The Niners have fallen to 1-4, and Chip Kelly, believe it or not, still has a winning record as an NFL head coach.
Does he really?
Yeah. Yeah, he's 27-25 now. But the night, you know, this year.
Yeah, it's 1-4, and I don't know how.
No.
It's sinking fast.
Do you think they will fire him? Like, how long do you think he has in San Francisco?
There's too much money, I think, invested to fire him. Remember, they're still paying off Jim Tomsula, and I know Tomsula wasn't a huge contract, but Tomsula was making, you know, I think, $3 million a year. Chip Kelly's making, and now they don't release salaries in the NFL. But I think it was Schefter that reported he makes about 6.5, and that was a 4-year deal. So that's a lot of money to pay a guy to go away after 1 year. And
I don't think they're gonna fire.
And him. I don't think they fired Tomsula after just one season, right? I don't think he got two.
Yeah,
I think Tomsula had one. So I just find it hard to believe that you're going to go through another coach after a 1 year disaster like this. There's too much money involved, too much payout. And I think when they brought in Chip, they had to have known between Colin Kaepernick and Blaine Gabbert, and I suppose Christian Ponder, that there was going to be some growing pains here as they try to turn over that roster.
Well, but that's what's so puzzling is Tomsula didn't have anybody good either. And he won 5 games and they fired him.
See, and I feel like Tomsula was just a patsy.
What does that mean?
I think he was brought in, like after the Harbaugh disaster, I think he was just brought in as a puppet. And someone that management could control, and then they cut him loose when Kelly became available.
Okay, maybe so, but I'm just saying that they just don't look any better. It doesn't look any different than Tomsula's Niners.
No, it doesn't.
You know, and they fired Tomsula, so I don't know, it's weird. I think they're gonna keep Chip for a couple, 3 years while they try to get this roster repaired.
But think about that, though. If Tomsula was $3.5 million a year, and they cut him loose after 1 year, so they had to pay him $14 million basically to go away after 1 year's work. And now you're gonna ask the ownership to swallow $24+ million for Chip Kelly to go away after 1 year. I think even if it gets bad and they only win one game, I just think that's too much money for management to say that we're gonna give up for 2 years of coaching.
Well, I think what's interesting is everybody's got their eye on him because he was such a good college coach. And they think that maybe he'll end up back in college with all these openings. You know, I mean, if Texas has an opening, if USC has an opening, don't you think they'll call Chip?
Well, and that may be the case because then maybe Chip pulls a Nick Saban. Remember, Saban didn't get fired. Saban left.
Do you think that he would leave the Niners to go back to college?
If he's getting his ass kicked and he feels like he's been exposed and the team quits on him again like they did in Philadelphia, wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, I feel like he will only go back to college when the NFL won't have him anymore. I really think he wants to see how he can do in the NFL, and he's still in the process of trying that. Although, I tell you what, man, he is...
It's humbling.
Yeah, he just does not look like anything special at all. I mean, he was a standout college coach, and in the NFL, he just... Like, all of the shine is gone. Like, there's nothing...
The greatest... Some people say the greatest college football coach of all time, Nick Saban, was exposed in the NFL, and it's humbling. And I wonder, and you listen to Saban. You remember the unauthorized autobiography about Nick Saban? Do you remember any of that?
No.
And the Zach Thomas stuff?
No idea.
So if you go back and read some of that, and we got a copy of it and I flipped through it, and one of the things that was in the book and we talked about it was Saban is a notorious control freak. Sound like anyone else you know? Chip Kelly.
Chucky Buckles.
Chucky Buckles. And Zach Thomas would regularly make fun of Nick Saban in the middle of Dolphins practice in front of everybody, taunt him, make fun of him, and basically tell him, blank you, and make fun of him for being a college whatever. And it would steam Saban. And Zach Thomas's response was, F you, what are you going to do? And there was this real push-pull, and everyone thinks it's because he didn't have a quarterback. A lot of people think Saban left because he couldn't handle dealing with NFL players. And when you look at Chip Kelly, who was a notorious control freak at Oregon, and all the stuff that he makes his players go through, it didn't work in Philadelphia. If he loses this team in San Francisco, and you get players that start turning on him like that, egos like Chip Kelly's and Nick Saban's cannot handle grown men that they're supposed to be in charge of, basically telling them to go blank themselves. And that, if anything, would drive, to me, Chip Kelly back to college football, where he can put his thumb back on the players, have all the control he wants, have the success, and he doesn't have to deal with that in the NFL. So if something makes him leave, I think it'll be the team turning on him like Nick Saban had in Miami and what was going on in Philadelphia, where I think at the end of his Philadelphia tenure, I think the players, Jason Peters for one, basically stopped playing just to prove to Chip Kelly, you need us. We don't need you. I'll still be here. You won't be. Watch this.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of it has to do with just if your success in the NFL has to do with the roster that you're given.
Well, there's an element of that.
I mean, that's a lot of it. And yeah. He, unfortunately, was handed the keys to build his own roster, and that failed.
Well, he tanked it.
It failed.
His roster was pretty good in Philadelphia, and Doug Peterson, by the way, is proving that.
Oh, so you think that he did a good job building a roster?
Well, I mean, when you look at what he did in Philadelphia, you can't sit there and say that it was a roster that was without talent. San Francisco's, you might be able to say that. Philadelphia's roster was not bare bones. Far from it. Huh. I don't know if he did a good job putting one together, but he had 1 year and it fell on its face. But Doug Peterson has come in. Now, granted, they have Carson Wentz, but Philadelphia, especially their defense, looks really good.
Yeah, see, I don't know that he needs to be a GM. That whole GM,
oh, that's the players. That's a disaster. Philadelphia has basically undone everything that Chip Kelly did.
Well, that's what I was saying.
Oh, okay. I was missing the point there.
Yeah, he failed miserably at that aspect of it. And they've already turned that thing way over, right? I mean, it's not a lot of Chip Kelly players left in Philly.
Yeah.
So it's not a...
No, it's not his roster.
It's not Doug Peterson doing a great job with Chip Kelly's players. It's not at all. They have totally wiped themselves of the Chip Kelly era. So that failed. So now he goes to another place where he doesn't have a great roster. And he's 1-4. Like, see, to me, that has more to do with it than he just, oh, his offense wouldn't translate. No reasonable person thought that even he knew his offense wouldn't translate. He did not take his college offense and put it in the NFL.
No.
He did not do that. He was smart enough to know that would not translate.
He's tried to adapt it, but it hasn't worked.
Yeah, he's tried to adapt it, but if you watch his offense now,
nope.
It's just not, it's nothing like what he ran at Oregon, right? Nope. It's like, so he's adapted. I just think that the fact that he hasn't had good rosters and when he was given control of the roster, he failed with it. That has more to do with him failing in the NFL than anything else. And I would love to see him get a good roster and see how he could do.
Yeah. Yeah. I would also be interested to see if he goes back to college, the fact that tempo is no longer that big of a deal in college. I'd be interested to see what his system looks like in college now. because when he was running roughshod over people, the tempo was just, it was murderer's row. No one could hang with it. Everyone runs it now. And I think that's one of the reasons why Oregon has taken a huge step back to the pack. I'd be interested to see, no, he probably ends up with someplace maybe with better talent if he ends up at USC or Texas, something like that. But I wonder what that looks like now that you're no longer ahead of the curve, because he hasn't been able to reinvent the wheel in the NFL. Could he go back to college and reinvent it?
I don't know.
I'd give him the opportunity. I'll tell you what. If I had a program, damn right I'd sign him up.
I don't know about reinventing anything, but I think it's all about recruiting. Again, it's roster building. Yeah. And in the NFL, he's not had good rosters. In college, you better believe he was a hell of a recruiter. And he is going to bring in other guys who can recruit. So wherever he goes, yeah, I think he's going to be successful in college because he has his hand again in building the roster. I think that's the biggest reason why Helfrich is not living up to Chip, is that they're not building as strong a rosters as Chip did with his guys who are better recruiters.
Yeah.
So that's really all it is. It's roster building. I mean, the guy can obviously coach. He knows X's and O's. He's been successful. He won 10 games in Philly twice. 10 games.
Yeah.
You know how many teams would do cartwheels to win 10 games back-to-back?
Couldn't beat good teams.
And he did that, though.
Couldn't beat good teams, though.
But give him credit for that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the NFL. You win 10 games, you're not just beating patsies to do that. That's not,
That's
not smoke and mirrors.
But he lost his team.
No question. I'm not saying he's great. I'm just, you know, he's got a winning record despite never having a good roster. So what happens when he gets a good roster? That, I think, is the ultimate telltale sign of whether Chip would lose a good roster, just like he lost what happened in Philly, or he may lose the Niners.
And does he stick around long enough in San Francisco to get
a
good roster?
And I don't know if he has a good enough GM to really put something good together.
And I don't know whether or not he gets fired, or if someone USC, Texas, LSU comes calling, does he go back? Because I think Chip with LSU or Texas or USC's talent would be real fun to watch, because I think he's a very special college coach.
One last thought here, and we'll break, but if you're him, and you know his affinity for the NFL, like he really wanted to prove he could do it in the NFL, right? Well, he's gotten two opportunities now. I think he'll see this one through. But why would you not be thinking, hey, the NFL is hard because I can't control who they give me? If they give me a steaming pile of crap, there's only so much I can do. And when I had that control, it was too much. I couldn't do both, and I failed, right? Why would college not look appealing when you know you can go back and have absolutely complete 100% control of who your players are?
Yeah.
And that's really all, that's the biggest thing.
And play and probably get a program where you're going to be more talented than 90% of the teams that you play. You'll have that built-in advantage.
All right, text 55305. We'll get to a few of those, and then we'll move into the club on the Fan.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Brought to you by Sherry's Cafe and Pies.
On 1080 The Fan.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about Chip Kelly. And who knows, you know, I think eventually he'll be back in college. But I still think there's a chance he has success in the NFL, but he's going to have to find a quarterback and a GM, much like Bill Belichick did, because he had his down years, right? Pete Carroll did.
Bill's the only guy, though, that kind of runs his own personnel. He's different, but you're talking about the greatest modern-day NFL coach of all time. That's asking a lot. But, like, you know, even the greats, Bill Walsh, Bill Parcells, all those guys, they all had GMs.
Well, exactly. But here's what I'm saying. Like, Bill Belichick wasn't considered that before he got to New England.
Yeah.
So what does that mean?
Yeah, you can take time.
There's only so much that you can do as a head coach if you do not have a good organization with good management, with a good owner, with a quarterback. This is just, I mean, that's just the bottom line. Like, Pete Carroll sucked in his first two stints. Mm-hmm. And what happens in Seattle? He's no different of a coach, is he?
Gets a good organization, gets a good GM, and they turn that thing around.
But he has input on player personnel. Oh. But they've been a good pair there. So, you know, I don't know. The question is, does Chip Kelly ever get that opportunity? And the answer may be no, because a lot of coaches have come and gone who never got that opportunity.
Well, and a lot of people, and again, this is all just opinion, but you hear speculation that just believe that his offense doesn't work, that once you figure it out, that there's not enough substance to it. And what's interesting is in college, his offense was very basic. It was very simple. It was not complex, but it was run at breakneck speed and it was done with great execution. But at the NFL level, it just hasn't proved to be that. It hasn't clicked like that. And a lot of people think that that system will not work in the NFL. And so despite the roster that he's given, I think that's the other question about Chip. And who knows, you know, what exactly the answer to that is. But there are some people that just believe that the scheme that he runs is not going to work long term in the NFL. And for people saying that Kaepernick is some sort of great fit for it, that's laughable, because if it was, he would be putting Colin Kaepernick in. Chip Kelly is not dumb. Chip Kelly is a very smart guy. I think Chip Kelly is a very bright football mind. And there's a reason why Colin Kaepernick hasn't been playing.
By the way, I think if you go to
Kaepernick, I think you think it's a dumpster fire under Blaine Gabbert. I think it's going to be much worse under Colin Kaepernick.
Could be. But then there's Christian Ponder to save the day.
Well, you know, Sam Bradford looks really good in Minnesota. And Sam Bradford looked okay in Philadelphia, too.
At times he did, yeah. His offensive line... I mean, yeah, he got beat up.
He got beat up pretty good.
All right, folks.
But that doesn't
move on here.
Yeah, just that someone pointed out that Spurrier and Saban didn't make it either, and you're talking about two Hall of Fame coaches. So just because he fails at the NFL level does not mean that Chip Kelly is not a great coach. He is attempting to do something that two guys, I think, in the history of college football have ever done. Jimmy Johnson, Pete Carroll, that have been elite, truly elite college coaches. National championship type coaches. Bill Walsh coached at Stanford and went on, but I mean, he was an NFL guy through and through. I'm talking about guys that were college guys that had tremendous success and then had tremendous success in the NFL. In my mind, maybe I'm missing a couple, but you're talking about two. That is rarefied company. And there's a lot more guys that were Hall of Fame college coaches, elite guys, really smart guys that didn't make it. It's just a different animal, and he ultimately may not be cut out for it.
All right. Wow. Wait till you hear what's going on with Trump today.
Yeah, this is something.
We have the audio.
And yet, I don't think it surprises anyone.
So we'll get to that next. It's the Club Hour on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.